You're listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco. You're listening to Reality Sandwich. My name is Martin Matthews. I am a certified medical hypnotherapist and healthful living advocate and co-host of Reality Sandwich, brought to you by Healthful Living every week, Thursday at noon, where we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on subjects of the mind, the body, the planet, our co-creative human existence and experiment here on the planet. And today, co-hosting Reality Sandwich with me is Camila Aguilar. She's one of our regular co-hosts. She's a practicing clairvoyant, astrologer, artist, storyteller, and writer, and she loves cultivating new forms of community engagement for herself and others. She moderates Studio B Community Space over in Potrero Hill. It's a large, light, and tree-filled space. I know I've used it for a workshop. It's absolutely wonderful. She invites people to come there from all over for arts and spiritual and educational events, and spoken word, dramatic movement, music, performance, yoga, meditation, discussion, politically oriented organizing. Camila considers herself a networker. She's always interested in what people are up to and bringing like minds together to share resources. She says collaboration is where it's at. Studio B has a great feel and has provided an inspirational base for many new projects of the past 17 years that she's been running the place. It's incredible. If you have a project that you'd like to get off the ground, she can give you low-cost space for your endeavor, and she can be reached at 415-255-9794 or by email at pixelcam, which is spelled exactly how it sounds, pixelcam, at copper.net. So today I'm excited because Camila is co-hosting with me, and she's brought along a guest, Fred Beauvais, to our show, who's here in the studio. He's the director of the San Francisco Botanical Gardens Adult Education Program. So, welcome, Camila.
Hi.
And can you please tell us all about our great guest today?
I am very excited to bring in today Fred Beauvais, who I originally met through a mutual friend who said, permaculturist, you guys have to meet. And we had a conversation that just spanned the planet, really, and I realized that I've been introduced as a permaculturist throughout the last year. I've been co-hosting the show, and I forget sometimes that we still have some old definitions for permaculture. Oh, it's farming and you know, worms. Who cares? So I'm going to update that definition now before introducing Fred, just because it's going to be a wonderful segue to what we'll be talking about, permaculture and beyond. What I'd like to say is permaculture is a mind frame. It's a design-oriented perspective on cultivating. And it started back in the 70s. The term was coined by a man, Bill Mollison, who was looking at sustainable ways of moving beyond the destructive food production practices that we have continued to use on a broad scale in food production around the planet. It's based on the basic tenets of care for people, care for the earth, and reinvest the surplus into the community or into the system, the living system. So rather than, say, shipping it all out so it could be sold cheaply through Walmart, we're thinking about building guilds, is what we call it in permaculture, or communities. So there are a lot of corollaries within the mindset of permaculture, and I'm going to extend it's beyond food production to cultivation. So we're cultivating community. We're cultivating connection between people. We're cultivating ways of promoting life on the planet in all of its forms. And today, I would like to say, in this line of thinking, that Fred Beauvais has been one of the most the dearest bon vivants I have come across in this avenue or this growing network of people who are thinking about solutions for the planet and our continued creative ability to be here. So welcome, Fred Beauvais.
Thanks, Camila. I've got to return the compliment. Whenever we get together, it seems like our discussions actually do span the planet, and that's always a fun trip to take. So...
Well, what I didn't say in all of this saying is one of the things that you've done recently is join with the San Francisco Botanical Gardens, and you're directing the adult education program there. Can you tell us a little bit about why you wanted to take your permaculture being there and what you're doing and so on?
Well, I saw it as a great opportunity to introduce ideas into the mix that haven't been there before, and a forum to present topics to folks to make them think about cultivating their relationship with the planet, with each other, and with San Francisco in a different way than they've thought of things before. So I was basically given a pretty much a blank slate to come in and envision the kind of education program that might most benefit folks living here in San Francisco and in the Bay Area. So some of the things I've, of course, I want to introduce more permaculture classes and workshops, which we're doing in our way, and also to cultivate person guilds, people guilds.
Right.
So let's back up a little bit and talk about guilds.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Mollison, in his seminal works on permaculture in the 1970s, envisioned orchards or food production areas as guilds, where plants and people and animals and nature and the elements all worked in this harmonious musical way to produce a result that was greater than the sum of the parts. And when one starts with one's hands in the soil, which is a typical start for permaculturists, you can't help but take that the spark between the seed and the soil and the relationships between plants and people. And I mean, you're thinking about it constantly, so it naturally carries over to other ways of thinking about designing and solving problems. So,
right. It's commonly said in Permaculture 101, the problem is the solution.
The problem is exactly the solution. And your what is often thought of as a waste product can actually be a surplus that can be reinvested somewhere else. So one thing could serve many functions. So to stack functions, so for example, a tree can serve as a windbreak but also provide shade for something else, and maybe fruit, and its roots could provide a home for mycorrhizae and fungi to grow. So there's things going at every level in a permaculture solution.
Is that like one of the core tenets of permaculture? Is this notion that everything is usable in some way? That
everything is interrelated,
mm-hmm.
Which is a basic tenet, and therefore interusable.
Sure. I'd like you to talk just a little bit more, if we can. I know you were giving a bit of a description before about permaculture. If I'm a complete layperson and all I know of permaculture or horticulture is, you know, growing food, and I appreciate the explanation that it's more than just cultivating food, but I'm trying to set a context for myself in my mind here about the importance of this way of thinking and the practices of the philosophy and the tenets of permaculture in our world today. I mean, clearly we could, and I don't want to go off too far on a tangent about how wasteful we are in the world and how we typically use something and whatever's left over we throw it away. But clearly we're at a point on the planet today where this type of thinking needs to be dramatically cultivated within all of us. Yeah, what are some of your thoughts about that?
Well, part of that stems from your intention.
Mm.
The intention to create waste for profit is one that's not really a sustainable intention for very much longer. I mean, you can only get away with that for so long. And like you said, Martin, let's not digress into that discussion because, I mean, we're all sort of, I think, on the same page there. Permaculturists, almost every person I know in the field approaches permaculture in a different way. And that's part of its unique appeal, I think. Oftentimes, it's called the cutting edge of 10,000-year-old technology, which is a perfect way to say you're turning your mind back to a place where all the corporate greed and waste didn't even exist anymore, and humans had to take their place in the world, in the guild of the environment, with other mammals, with plants, with the elements with fire, with water, earth, and air. So when you're getting back to that level, you can't help but shift the focus of your intention to a more harmonious balance between the elements and man or woman.
I love that way of thinking, because if I even just begin to imagine 10,000 years ago and you know, myself as a evolving human being, clearly everything around me, I would be figuring out how to use in some way. And I would clearly understand that if I, you know, made some waste and dumped it, you know, right out in front of where I was sleeping, how that was going to impact me tomorrow.
Yeah.
And it just seems, and I'm heavily influenced because I've been watching the Cosmos, Carl Sagan's Cosmos series again recently. So completely infused with the deep tentacle comprehension of the nature of all things and the interconnectedness. So it's like we have to go back 10,000 years to re-grasp these basic tenets of the universe. 5,000 years.
Yeah, I could kind of, you know, point at what anthropologists would say. We started from a earth and land-based society to a more conquest-oriented, or as feminists might say, patriarchal, patrilineal empire-building intention. And it's not necessarily life-supporting.
Right.
Empire building is interested in building empire. And it doesn't matter what quality of life exists within empire, as we've noticed today. So it's really coming back to intention always.
And when you were talking about imagining what it was like 10,000 years ago, I have to share this with you, a realization that I just had a few days ago. I just returned from Arizona yesterday, and I have the privilege of working on a watershed project in eastern Arizona that's absolutely phenomenal. And part of what we do out there, well, okay, there's two things. I'll give you the down low first. Part of what we do out there is manage the watershed for an area that was heavily damaged by a fire 2 years ago. I don't know if you remember the summer of 2002, I guess it was 3 years ago, the 600,000 acres in Arizona burned. And that burn was a result of modern practices of managing the land. That is, taking it away from the natural state, making it agriculture or grazing land, and then taking that grazing land and turning it to subdivisions. So what that did was take away the management of that land. And what we're doing on this property in eastern Arizona is reclaiming that land for what it originally was. Most white or European settlers who came to this continent did not realize that the land here was being elegantly managed by the first people. The 10,000 years ago, the people who lived on that site, and there were lots, it was heavily populated, managed that land absolutely beautifully. They brought plants with them in their migrations in the summer to the mountains, in the summer, in the winter to the lower lands. They limbed up the forests. They lived in concert with the animals there, and they watched the sky. Because the site is so remote, we were able to see the sky at night. This is the second thing I was going to think about. There was no TV. There was nothing. There wasn't even radio. It was just this. There's mass of sky, and the moon was full 2 nights ago, and it was just, I mean, you could literally read by it. It was so intense and beautiful, and we were just sitting in silence and awe of this amazing place on the earth that we have the privilege to interact with. And it wasn't patriarchal or unilineal. It was this so connected feeling, and to take that feeling and bring it into your intention and perspective in other areas of your life is just, you can't even put a price on that. It's not even in the same league with that. So, yeah. Meanwhile, we were checking on some check dams and gabions that we had built 2 years ago that had withstood the summer rains, and we had interplanted some native mountain mahoganies so that the roots and branches wove together to form these little weirs to slow down the movement of the earth that was coming with water. So each element had such force and presence in that setting that it was just breathtaking.
Wow, that's a beautiful story for Mercury retrograde. We could take our wrists, back of our wrists, away from our foreheads. It's not all bad. That
just for a minute, yeah.
Perfect place. You know, no radio, no TV, no cell phones, and just be in touch with the communications that we miss most of the time.
Oh, it's awesome.
Thank you for sharing that. That's gorgeous.
Yeah.
I'm just looking forward to hearing about so many of the projects that you've mentioned. You seem to have a thumb on the wires of so many people's activities in the Bay Area, and
yeah.
I'm sure probably beyond. Can you tell us some of your touch your heart, the greatest projects?
Yeah, some of my reach and touch my heart projects are some of the things that I'm starting to do at the San Francisco Botanical Garden. As you know, the Botanical Garden at 9th and Lincoln Way is part of the greater Golden Gate Park. It's a 55-acre botanical reserve that was created in the 1920s on the behest of the Strybing family. It doesn't carry the Strybing name anymore. We changed the name to the San Francisco Botanical Garden to distinguish it from the Conservatory of Flowers, which is the big Victorian building, which is across the music concourse from where we are. Part of what our mission there is to educate and conserve. So we teach conservation, and we foster appreciation for the earth in providing a space for a respite, kind of like we talked about from the, you know, the cell phones and the TVs and the everything going on, to just turn everything off and come into the space of the garden. It's intentionally designed around microclimates from around the world, which are similar to the Bay Area. So we have a garden completely of Chilean plants, just as if you were in Chile and seeing native plants there. One of the centerpiece gardens is the Alfred Menzies Garden, which is an endowed garden of California native plants. And it has an arroyo, a dry stream bed, beautiful California buckeyes, Aeschylus californica, that you can look up into and contemplate. Garrya elliptica, which is a silk tassel, and Arctostaphylos, manzanitas, interweaving with them, and lots of native wildflowers. It's just an amazing spot to see what this area might have looked like 10,000 years ago with just native plants and grasses that were not introduced with the European settlement.
Mm.
So that theme is carried over into other regional gardens. So we have a demonstration of Australian native plants with an Aboriginal circle in the middle that was designed by Australian First People. The New Zealand garden actually has plants in it that are used by New Zealanders for food and medicine, which are very interesting to see. We have a rhododendron garden, which we just are renovating, and it's underplanted with native Asian species rhododendrons, from which the rhododendrons in garden cultivation are hybridized from. There's a dry garden which shows all succulent plants from around the world. It's just an amazing place to wander around and go, oh, this is what South Africa might look like.
I love the South African garden.
Yeah,
I was there with one weekend with a group of us. We were doing field journaling, painting.
Oh, yeah.
And I fell into the South African section. It's just so otherworldly.
It is otherworldly.
It's so gorgeous. You have aloes that have these fuzzy orange hairs that stick off the edges, and the sun comes through and it just illuminates.
Yeah.
And you see aloe in a different way.
Yeah.
It's really a separation from that garden. Is just, I want to say, is if you haven't been, go. Give yourself the the great gift of having a wonderful place to really.
Year round, too, right?
Yeah,
it's
year
really
round.
It's not like there's any better time to go there.
We're blessed in the Bay Area with a climate that is a year-round outdoor cultivation kind of world. So there's always something going on there. You were talking about painting. We're offering a plein air class in the spring where folks can bring out their watercolors. We have this amazing teacher. Her name is Mary Harden. She is absolutely one of the most gifted artists I've ever met. Lives in the Mission, does her work at Sharon Studios and also at the Botanical Garden. And she's taking groups out just to have them look at things in a different way. Her techniques to do that are revolutionary, and the work that comes out of her classes is amazing, amazing. So
check the website out.
Check it out. sfbotanicalgarden.org is the website, and you can click on any of the links there, and it'll take you to our events and educational opportunities that we have, and also to show you little glimpses into the collection of plants that we're featuring. Also, you know, tangential to that connection between the earth and people, we're offering something that hasn't been offered before, and we're creating this venue for learning about horticultural therapy. And that's using the connection between people and the land to heal ourselves. And not just in the context of allowing people the space to heal with the earth, but also facilitating that process for healthcare providers, activity directors, occupational therapists, and other folks that want to know about the connection between people and the earth.
So it's a great opportunity to invite professionals in therapeutic fields to expand their understanding of what they offer to the community and so be connected in an earth way.
How does that work? What does the program do? I mean, as you said, I'm envisioning, you know, let's all get back to our roots and get back into mud pies.
Well, you know what? Mud pies aren't a bad thing. Mm-hmm. You know, mud is just, you know, it's alive.
Yeah.
One of the things that was a little eye-opener for me in studying permaculture was the interrelationship between all the organisms that are in the earth, in soil, that's alive. So oftentimes you say you don't feed the plants, you feed the soil, and the soil feeds the plants. You're not working with nature, you're working from within nature because you're part of it. So that's what we're teaching in horticultural therapy. A woman named Karen Talbot, who teaches at Merritt College and also Diablo Valley in the East Bay, who's a registered horticultural therapist, is facilitating the process for us. And she's going to show us how to envision a mud pie from behind the eyes of a sight-impaired person, of what that might be like to touch that life force in a way that isn't the way we're accustomed to as sighted people, for example. Or to... I'm reading a book now by Stephen Herod Buhner called The Lost Language of Plants. Have you read that, Camila?
Oh, it's on my bookshelf.
Oh, my God, it's so good. Mm-hmm. But one of the things, he quotes one of his workshop participants who showed up to one of his medicinal plant lectures by saying, "The reason I came here is because I think I'm crazy and I need to put my hands in the dirt." You know, and boy, that just resonates. And it resonated with everyone in his practice, and it just resonates with so many folks that I've talked to and interacted with throughout the years. It just makes sense to reestablish your connections when you want to get grounded.
Well, there it is, the word grounded. In
yeah.
My clairvoyant practice, I'm actually connected with the school here in the city, and we use that term all the time, and it literally does mean that, you know, connect to the center of the planet, connect to the biosphere, be a living being in your body. It's not transcendent meditation, getting out there and away from it all or some life hereafter. It's ground. Ground. So yeah.
Yeah, and the big aha
in the earth is what we do.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, the big aha for me was we're not interacting, we're part of the earth. I mean, the earth is us, really. I mean, you think about the constituents of our physical body, it's just water and chemicals and not too much else.
Air, you know, I mean, we're earth and we're comprised of four major things.
I know. So we're really not that much different than that mud pie.
Right.
When you really think about it.
And it's amazing that we've evolved somehow into this world now where so much of the things that we touch and interact with and feel are fake, are made of plastic or glass or in some other fashion that, you know, how often do we typically in our daily lives really get to interact with, you know, the earth? We can spend weeks walking on cement and on carpeting and on hardwood floors. Well, hardwood floor, I guess, is somehow, you know, part of the earth, but so rarely do we take the intended time to go out and connect with so much diversity in life, which is why I just love the botanical garden, because it's like it's a journey around the world.
I know. And once you take that first step, you think, okay, here's this beautiful bamboo grove. Bamboo is a grass. It's in the Poaceae family, which is, you know, grasses.
Huh.
It's a sustainable resource that can be grown and used to make a bazillion things, from cosmetics to that hardwood floor that
gorgeous
you're walking on.
Floors.
Yeah. And if it's mindfully harvested and constructed, you're taking another step on a floor that has an intention, rather than just some statusy thing that you order from a company that doesn't have in mind care for the earth.
Mm-hmm.
So take a step in the garden, take another step, connect that step to your thought process, and develop those intentions. Unbelievable.
You're listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco. This is Reality Sandwich, and I'm Martin Matthews. I'm here today with co-host Camila Aguilar, and we're speaking with our guest Fred Bouvet of the SF Botanical Gardens. And I'd like you to tell me a little bit more about some of the programs out there. You were just getting into that, some of the varied programs out there at the Botanical Gardens, one of which was bringing in folks and helping them get grounded and touching the earth.
Sure. That's the horticultural therapy introduction series that we have. It's a series of lectures that will be happening. They're lectures and hands-on workshops that are happening this spring. You can check www.sfbotanicalgarden.org. Click on education for the full inside story. Also, when you're there, you might see we're doing a couple of other things that are a little bit fun. We're doing a Cobb construction workshop in April at the Brooks Avenue Community Garden over by State. It's a really cool group of neighborhood folks that want to learn how to create something from the earth. From mud that we've been talking about. Another mud pie.
Yes.
It's a theme today.
We all come from the mud.
And we could use mud to sit on. And I don't know if you've ever been to the Eco House over in Berkeley on Ohlone Way. They have a killer Cobb structure that they use to store tools for the community garden. It has a thatched roof, a little sod and thatched roof, and this beautiful Cobb constructed house with recycled windows set in it. And this is a little alizé slip, like a clay slip color on it. It's cool. And we're going to be teaching a workshop in that in April. It's going to be led by Lydia Nielsen, who's a permaculturist from Santa Cruz and an amazing woman. Queen of Cobb, we call her.
Cobb, please explain.
Cobb is straw, clay, and water.
And a lot of energy.
Energy. There's actually Cobb songs and a Cobb rhythm and, you know, percussion that goes on with it, and it's a group activity.
Mm-hmm.
It's the, again, the cutting edge of 10,000-year-old technology. I mean, you can almost imagine our ancestors constructing things out of the earth
mm-hmm.
this way, because it has an earth and person rhythm. So you get one person, you try to avoid the hose fights, but you get one person putting the water on and other folks adding the straw and the clay, and it's usually done on a little tarp, and you move the tarp in such a way that the straw and the clay move with you. There might be somebody drumming at the same time.
And I've always done it where you actually step on it. It's kind of like grape stepping.
Stomping, yeah.
Stomp on top of the tarp. Get all those clods to break
to
down.
To get it all broken up.
Yep.
I'm sitting here watching the two of you. I can imagine the two of you guys as kids. Playing in the rain, playing in the mud, getting
amazing.
Their clothes all stained with dirt and stuff. Those are the days. Those are great.
The end results are beautiful.
Yeah.
There's also Penny Livingston's Northern California, Permaculture Institute of Northern California.
Pink.
Right. Remember Pink. Up in the Point Reyes area.
She's in Bolinas now.
In Bolinas,
Institutes,
Bottom end, hidden Bolinas. And
right.
You will find some Cobb structures on the Pink property there.
Oh, yeah. Penny's little dragon house is famous. She was, Oh, man, she's amazing. Well, Penny taught me how to do Cobb.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Penny and Brock Dolman from the Occidental Arts and Ecology Center mm-hmm. up in Occidental.
Another fabulous place.
Oh, my God. Yeah, amazing mm-hmm. place. So our Cobb workshop should be a lot of fun.
Cool. Great.
Yeah. We're also teaching composting and vermiculture workshops that are in conjunction with our plant sales.
And there's tell us what vermiculture is.
Vermiculture. Not permaculture, vermiculture.
Vermiculture.
Vermiculture is using worms.
Okay.
It's putting worms into the mix, you know, using worms. Well, worms using you. I mean, it's sort of like creating a relationship with worms and using worm castings to nourish soil, and that soil nourishes food.
Well, that's what the worms do, right? I mean, they eat the soil and they poop out good stuff, right?
That's what they're what they're all about. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Worms are born to nurture soil. That's just it.
Yep.
Poop is good in the worm world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like adding worms to the mud pie mix pretty much.
Okay, now we're getting slimy.
Yeah, pretty much. I'll tell you what though, every time I facilitate a permaculture workshop, there's always like the one person that is discovering play for the first time in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And we were kind of just, we were flirting with that subject just like a second ago, but man, I'm thinking about a person that was in a permaculture workshop that I did in Pacifica not too long ago. And he's this like pretty stalwart kind of dude. You know, he's a middle-aged white guy that's sort of like kind of locked into his little way. But man, he was sitting down with, he was diverting a little stream bed, and we were creating a little swale and a berm, you know. And man, he was playing with mud, and it was just like his inner child was rejoicing. It was just like too long suppressed. And it was such a nice thing to see, this relationship between this guy who probably didn't have that much joy going on beforehand to really create something completely different for himself.
Mm-hmm. Getting back in the ground rings back.
Yeah.
All our memories are in our bodies, and just by opening our bodies to varying systems, we bring back where our bodies have been before. And play has always been part of our old, old body of knowledge.
Yeah.
In the dirt and, yeah, rolling in the grass and so on.
Before we were told not to do it.
Right.
Before we were told to stay clean and get out of the mud.
Then we hit our 40s and then we get to do all that. It's like, wait a minute, who said we can't do that? Then we're free.
How true.
Yeah.
How very true.
Adolescence has nothing on middle age, I have to say.
Well, we get to make different choices. We're not... And we can be more informed about our intentions now. And that's kind of part of what we're doing here right now today, is reforming our intentions and making them more conscious.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And not so reactionary.
Exactly.
That's the benefit of having been around the sun a few times. You pick up a few tidbits along the way and you realize, oh, I'm actually my own being by making choices that are feeding an intention and is coming from my needs within, as opposed to reaction to that without. And
but
there's a lot more.
This way of being that you described, this thinking is, I mean, it happens in our lives, as you say, we get to be 40, we've been around the sun a few times, but it's certainly not exclusive to us. I mean, younger people now have the benefit of this collective knowledge.
Definitely.
I mean, just with the amount of information that we've been ingesting just in the last 10 years, you know, with the internet and how much we've been learning about our life here and getting feedback about it, and the more that we're getting that feedback about the implications of our ways of being, right? Young people today are beginning to notice, you know, more storms or rising oceans and melting glaciers, and you know, that's got to be infusing into their thinking in some way. So it's great that we're talking about these things and doing these programs so that even younger kids can infuse their minds with greater senses of interconnectedness earlier in life.
Right.
You'd think, huh?
You'd think,
Martin. But, you know, it's a double-edged sword, I think, sometimes. Not only are younger folks getting the benefit of more of the diversity of the ways of thinking, but they're also being marketed to in a way that's different than... we were 20 years ago, let's just say.
It's a lot more intense, isn't it?
No kidding. And it's a lot more insidious.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think a lot of them have actually really succumbed to the whole notion that if you're driving a Hummer and wearing a lot of bling, that you're really doing something great. You know, I mean, it's just I think it's been force-fed to them a lot more than it was to folks of our vintage.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But the problem is the solution.
Exactly.
And I do think that pressure cooker effect of industrialism is giving rise to maybe more rebels with the cause than...
Yeah.
I mean, when I grew up, I was a rebel, and it was definitely without a cause. It was just, you know, Catholic school, ooh, and, you know, the cops, ooh, yeah, like everything just to be against. And now it's so important for those of us who've come around a few times to put out what there is to be for, which is why I'm so excited by an education program like yours, where I am wondering, are there programs oriented toward younger people or grade school? Or
it's a problem that I think a lot of us are wrestling with right now. The whole baby boomer generation, as it ages, is looking at things in a little different way, and the generation coming up behind that is a completely different language and a different mindset. And a lot of us who have built programs around the baby boomer model are rethinking our way about how we're going to lead the next generation through their journey. It's so interesting. I don't know if you guys went to the Green Festival a couple weeks ago. It was so awesome to see like so many people packing the concourse at 8th and Brannan, and so many of them in their young 20s, just, you know, getting their first taste of thinking about things in a different way. I saw some amazing presentations. Daily Axe was there. Trethin from Daily Axe was talking about permaculture. And he was amazing in his ability to articulate the relationships between ideas in terms of a guild. I mean, he doesn't farm or have any kind of, you know, big spread of property like a lot of folks do. He was thinking about things just in terms of everyday acts. And it inspired so many people, including kids that I saw, you know, that couldn't have been more than 20, you know, just kind of hanging on every word. And I thought, wow, okay, there's hope.
Yes, there is.
There's hope here.
Mm-hmm.
The woman who's teaching the composting and vermiculture workshops is 23 years old. She's a master composter, and she is so inspiring, so inspiring. And her name is Megan Elliott. Hey, Megan, if you're listening... Hey. Anyway, I met Megan through the Livability Project. The Livability Project is they're based up in Santa Rosa now, and they're a group that is leading folks through their journey about thinking about sustainability. They're talking about waste reduction, urban design, transportation, environmental health, renewable energy, renewable water resources, and all focusing it on a neighborhood scale. So they're working from within neighborhoods to try to change the system. You can find out more about them at livabilityproject.org, and they're amazing. Kelly Rodula.
Are they connected with, you said Santa Rosa, are they connected with the government branches up there, or is this an independent group?
It's an independent group. They started in Pacifica and recently relocated to Santa Rosa, but what they're creating is a scalable model for any community so that folks within the community can become involved in taking control of their own environment, which I think is where the power is going to come from.
Exactly. That's where revolution is going to happen.
Yeah, baby.
Just change your mind. That's the real revolution.
And amongst the people doing this themselves and not necessarily waiting around for the government to change their minds and get on board.
Did you grow up hearing a lot of people saying things like, somebody should invent this, or why don't they do it this way? There was always the they and somebody, and it's like we never heard who those people were.
Yeah.
And it's turning out it's really us.
Those people are Soylent Green is people. No, those people are us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's working within nature, not working with it as if it's something else.
Right.
We are the government. We are nature. We are the earth. It's so radical to find that power and use it. Why not?
and it's so much more gratifying because things actually get done.
Yeah.
And you get some feedback.
Yeah.
You know, it's so easy to adopt that mindset of the mindset. You know, you walk past a piece of trash. Oh, somebody else will get it. You know, oh, they'll take care of this. Oh, somebody should fix that.
Why are people such pigs?
Yeah.
Right. Those people.
And
really,
idea.
If you're a little bit smart, it bothers you a little bit. There are those serotonin reuptake inhibitors that'll just keep you quiet, you know, until you actually, you know, take the reins.
Mm.
Right. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, get inspired and get connected.
Yeah.
And I love this notion you just mentioned, Camila, about being for something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and cultivating that within ourselves and within, certainly among young folks and really everyone, to be for something and hoping to avoid this notion of being against.
Right.
See something else? I don't like that. I'm going to get myself together and be against that thing. Well, yeah, that's cool too. We need some of that. But if you're doing that, you're not really creating. Somebody else is deciding the thing, and you're jumping on a bandwagon to be against it. Whereas it takes a little bit extra sort of personal notion and really stepping inside yourself to go, well, what do I want? What's really important to me that I want to move towards?
And that's what popular media does, is it really cultivates a resistance economy
mm-hmm.
where we are against the bird flu, don't get immunized. we're against, you know, whatever is being fed through the airwaves. And so we're not engaging, as you said, our creative impetus. We're not really shaping the world. We're just putting stoppage everywhere. And it's created toward developing consumerism, where you're against things, but you can assuage all this resistance by buying something, and somehow that's going to, you know, make it all better.
And you're right, Camille. It does start with the media.
Mm-hmm.
The media teaches us to be passive consumers.
Right.
In my former life, I worked in marketing for quite a number of years, so I know where this is all leading. It's awfully empowering for folks to take control of their own power, of their own destiny, of their own health. One of the people I have speaking, offering some classes this coming up in the spring, is named Chuck Garcia. He's a third generation curandero. He teaches traditional ways of using plants as medicine. And one of the classes that he's teaching is using herbs for bronchial support. So you're actually cultivating a relationship with your own medicine by growing it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how radical is that? Instead of being a passive consumer of pharmaceutical products,
right.
I don't know if you've ever used Flonase, but that stuff's like $90 for a little thing.
Yeah.
And there has been research that supports the fact that it creates a dependency.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you use native herbs that are growing right here in the Bay Area to help heal your body, it's just such a different way of experiencing things and a different way of taking control.
It creates integration as opposed to introducing a foreign body that is affecting your system in ways you don't even know really what those synthetics are doing until much later. And it's like, gee, we've got an epidemic in cancer. We have so many things going on around the planet. But in this country particularly, people are so ill and they don't know why.
Until they learn about, again, going back 10,000 years, what folks did when there wasn't giant pharmaceutical companies giving them synthetic drugs. A lot of those drugs are lipotropic. That means they only dissolve in fat. They don't dissolve in water. So there are salmon and gophers and, you know, animals with barbiturates in them, with Prozac in them, because of the pharmaceutical waste. That really is sad.
Oh, so besides worrying about our seafood being painted with
mercury,
we've got
yeah,
all sorts
we've got Claritin in our fish. You
lovely.
Know, it's My little trip to Arizona included a visit to Michael Moore, not the Michael Moore who did 9/11, but he writes books on medicinal plants, and he runs the Southwest School of Botanic Medicine, and he's a real character, not just a fake character. He is a real character. He looks like Hagrid, only older, you know, from Harry Potter. He's got all this hair and stuff. He's hilarious. He told me the other day that herbs aren't nurturing. They create an allergic reaction, and that's what makes them do their work. And to hear an old herbalist tell me this was really kind of, thought-provoking mm-hmm. in a way. But I guess when you're interacting with something, with a substance, whether it be pharmaceutical or something from the earth, you are creating a reaction, a scientific reaction.
Right.
Buhner, in his book, The Lost Language of Plants, which is on my mind today, talks about receiving information, how cultures all over the world have received information from plants in a shamanic way, and that the information has been consistent across cultures. Michael Moore disagrees with that, but I think that there's something to that premise.
Oh, isn't that called something like the six monkey? I'm not remembering how many numbers of monkeys, but the fact that innovations have popped up historically mm-hmm. around the globe without the, it's kind of like mycelium, isn't it? The way you have the fruit body, these innovations are the mushrooms, but underneath, invisible to our eyes, but under the soil is this network, and it just simultaneously has happened. Yeah.
All one organism.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, if you listen to David Suzuki speak about the nature of interconnectedness, he speaks about the air and how the air is alive. And he speaks about the particular molecules in the air and how the air that just came out from my breath will circulate around the world and really touch everyone. And he does this with such amazing intensity and such beauty that you hear him essentially saying that the air is alive. We are the air. There is no difference between us and the air and me and you. Mm-hmm. And the more that we can really begin to understand these details and these things, you know, at first it sounds like, oh, yeah, it's really interesting scientific stuff. But you can't not, I think, somehow have it permeate your being and somehow impact your comprehension of things in some way, which can only be absolutely positive. You know, in our last few minutes, I'd like to just kind of bring this right back to Reality Sandwich, right? And to talk about permaculture and just your few thoughts about how this thinking, this practice is necessary, absolutely imperative in our world today, and how it's going to impact our future together.
Once we make the realization that we're all part of that fruiting body, that mycelial organism that's all interconnected with us, with the air, earth, water, fire, the
even
planets,
the stars, above.
The, stars the heavens. I mean, it's all one. Once that realization clicks in our heads, mm-hmm. then permaculture makes complete sense.
It does, because it's allowing us to engage with an understanding. So we're actually participating. It's a collaborative effort as we all bring our thoughts to the garden and the guilds in human interactions. We begin to realize that we're all collaborating. We're creating the universe. This is the most amazing collaborative experiment conceivable. We are all building the universe together. And how do we know we're doing this? Well, this is what permaculture does. It says start just investigating. Use this as a framework. It's not like dogmatism, thou shalt this and that. It's just come in with an open, awe-filled, and just delighted mind.
It's a process of discovery and unfolding. A lot of people, I think it's lunchtime. It's a little bit before one, and a lot of people are unfolding their lunch. So maybe one thing to do would be to think about what you're putting in your mouth.
Mm.
It's so weird. I used to do this when I was a little child in school. I too went to a Catholic school. We weren't allowed to speak. We weren't allowed to talk during lunch. So I know. We can talk, or we can have actually an inner dialogue over our lunch and think about how many miles are on your lunch. You know, where did this food come from, and where is it going? How is the act of feeding yourself lunch connect to your interrelatedness as part of this big fruiting body of mycelium.
Right. And what is it affecting in the way you think and what you're going to contribute to the world? I think we're out of time now, but I want to say, Fred, I think it was such a good move for the Botanical Gardens to take you as the education director.
Thank you very much.
So many exciting programs I know are going to unfold because your mind is vast, and it's going to be very exciting to see where you take it.
It's always fun to hang out with you, Camila. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Fred. How do folks get a hold of you?
You can reach me at FBOVE, Fred Bove, at sfbotanicalgarden.org.
And Camila, how do folks get a hold of you and learn more about Studio B?
Okay. By email, it would be pixelcam at copper, copper.net. And my local number is 415-255-9794.
Great. Thank you both for being on Reality Sandwich today. My name is Martin Matthews. I am with Healthful Living. You can catch us at healthfullivingsf.com. Click on the KPU radio icon, and you'll be able to hear this show in just a couple of days. It'll be up online. We're here every Thursday at noon for Reality Sandwich, a palatable taste of the truth. We're going to be off next week for Thanksgiving. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening. You're listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco.